You're listening to Locked On Cavaliers, your daily look at the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Hello and welcome to the Locked On Cavaliers podcast for Friday, October 5th. I'm Chris Manning, your host from ForTheSword.com, and this is your daily look at the Cleveland Cavaliers from the Locked On Podcast Network, the number one daily local sports podcasting network. If you aren't already, you can find the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Megaphone, or wherever else you listen to podcasts, including Spotify. A five-star review is the best way to support the show, and you can find the show on Twitter and Facebook at Locked On Cavs. You can find me on Twitter and Facebook at CWMWrites. On today's show, I am emptying out the mailbag, finally, to take your questions on just about everything, and I'm also going to give you three things to look for in Saturday's Cavs-Celtics game. We'll have a recap up of that game in this feed on this podcast late Saturday night slash early Sunday morning. So after you watch Conor McGregor and Khabib Nurmagomedov fight Saturday night, you can listen to some Cavs podcasting. But first, we're actually going to play a quick clip from the Locked On Celtics podcast reacting to the Kyrie Irving news. You obviously know Kyrie Irving as the former Cavs point guard, had the biggest shot in franchise history, says he's going to commit to the Celtics long term based on something he said publicly at an event on Thursday. But here's John Corrales from Locked On Celtics talking about Kyrie.
John Corrales here from the Locked On Celtics podcast, where Kyrie Irving says he plans to re-sign with the Boston Celtics, telling a crowd at the TD Garden at a season ticket holders preseason event that he intends to re-sign with the Boston Celtics. That would be a five-year deal worth about $188 million. So it's a lot of money, and he has said throughout the entire preseason, beyond the finances, that there's nothing here in Boston that he wouldn't want to be a part of. He loves the teammates. He loves the direction. He loves even the new practice facility. They opened up a big, massive, modern practice facility. So everything from top to bottom has appealed to Kyrie Irving. And after he made the announcement, you started to see reports from Shams Charania, from others, that he has already been speaking to the Celtics owners and has expressed his intent to stay long term. Now, that seems to squash a lot of the rumors about him wanting to play with Jimmy Butler, wherever Jimmy Butler ends up, with him maybe wanting to play with Kevin Durant, wherever Kevin Durant ends up. And that often seems to be the Knicks, but there are other teams that were on his Cleveland trade list. And people pointed to the fact that Boston was not on that list, but he ended up getting traded there. He likes it, and he has been saying throughout this preseason since camp opened that he loves Boston. He wants to be here, and he said explicitly to the crowd he plans on re-signing. So that's it. He's going to take the money. He's going to take the security. He's going to be part of what should be a very good team from now on, and that's going to force some teams that had been targeting Kyrie Irving to make other plans. That's it. Listen to the Locked On Celtics podcast for more Kyrie Irving reaction.
So check out that podcast. John is great. Kyrie, I find still fascinating to this day, even though he no longer plays for the Cavaliers, the team I cover. But thanks again to John Corrales for sending that over. And please check out that podcast. Learn a little bit about Kyrie, as he is pretty fascinating to kind of dive into as a human being and as a player, and what he means for the future of the league. And it'd be really interesting to think about. I think about this a lot, actually, of what it would look like if he was in Kevin Love's role here, and sort of where the Cavs would be at now, how he would embrace that, how that would sort of react, how the other players would react to that, frankly, and how the organization, would be different if he was in that situation. So it's kind of a complicated thing, but it's interesting to think about. So today's show, again, mailbag, and we're going to dive into that. So first question comes from Marcel Patron. Apologize if I mispronounced that. He or she asked, what would you consider a successful season for the Cavs, considering how early we are in the rebuilding stage? So for me, we're going to get into this more next week with Ashley Bastock from the Toledo Blade, and formerly If You're the Sword, who you've heard on the show before, if you're a longtime listener. But my Cavs season takes basically comes down to, I want to see three core things. Number one, I think you want to see development from the young guys. The future of this team is not really Kevin Love. It's not Tristan Thompson. It's not any of the other guys. It is Jetty Osman. It is Colin Sexton. It is Ante Zizic. You want to see those guys all take some sort of step forward and prove that they look like they could be part of the solution down the line. You know, do you want Kevin Love to support them and have a great year? Ideally, yes. You want Kevin Love to help bridge this era to a large degree, but the future beyond the next 4 years, the next 3 years, is in these young guys. So you want to see all of them take a step forward. Number two, I would say I would think you want to just find out what you're sort of working with your other guys. You know, what is Kevin Love going to look like as he keeps getting a little bit older? What does Tristan Thompson's future look like? What does Larry Nance look like? What does Rodney Hood's future look like? Those are sort of the main guys. I think J.R. Korver, George Hill, some of these other guys are probably not long for the Caps beyond this season at the very least. So I think it's really about Thompson and Nance and Love kind of figuring what you have there, and Rodney Hood too, if they would re-sign him. But you want to see with how those guys might fit in and how they mesh with some of the younger players. And look, I think, frankly, I think the optimal outcome for this season is a somewhat competitive season where they can feel good about how they competed, that Sexton and Osman and Zizic and Love and everyone sort of hangs in, but they still get their lottery pick. You do not get a chance to rebuild your team the way you really want to have a chance to compete again without getting top level picks, getting top three picks, getting a number one picks. Kyrie Irving, number one pick. Tristan, number four pick. Waiters was a high pick. They obviously have Botch Bennett. You got Wiggins, who hasn't turned out to be very good, and used him as a number one pick to get Kevin Love. You need those high picks. Sexton and Osman, I think, could both be very good. It would be sort of surprising if they ended up being like top 20 players in the NBA as of right now. It would kind of buck what I think their curves likely are to be. So I think you want to get a chance at guys like Cam Reddish and guys that are going to be at the top of the draft next year. That's RJ Barrett. You're thinking about those things and not so much, I think, making the playoffs. But I think the Cavs would disagree with me there, and I think they'd rather make the playoffs. And that's the vibe I get from a lot of the players too. So our next question comes from Barack Obama, which is a very great name. He wrote this review in the iTunes store, in the Apple Podcast review section. So again, if you want to make sure you get your question gets answered, go there like Barack Obama did, and leave a five-star review. So his question is about Isaiah Hartenstein, who is a German player playing for the Rockets. So he asked, or whoever asked, don't want to assume gender, why didn't the Cavs give a look at Hartenstein? Was it just because he's on the Rockets summer league team? I think he could be a great stretch for the league, but I don't see many opportunities in Houston. I thought the perfect place would have been a place like Cleveland, especially with mentoring from guys like Channing and Kevin. So he, to the best of my knowledge, is signed to the Rockets. He's been a professional since 2000. So people that know, he's been a professional since 2000 for a couple years now. He's 20 years old. He's 7 foot, about 250 pounds. Played for the Rio Grande Vipers last year. He's played in the German league. He played with some Lithuanian team. He declared for the 2017 NBA draft. He was a second-round pick by the Rockets. So basically, he is not on the Cavs' radar because he has played for the Rockets. He was their draft pick, played for their G League team, assigned to them this year. He's a developmental prospect. He's a long ways away. Now, what I would say here in terms of complementing this idea is that he is someone and has the sort of skill set. I don't know much about him in terms of what kind of prospect he actually is. Someone like Trevor Magnotti, who you can find on Twitter at Illegal Screens, would see someone you want to kind of tweet this to. But I could see someone like this, a 7-footer who can shoot, being more interesting than someone like Zizic, for just because of the modernness of his game. Bradley Finiosky asked, "Hey Chris, with Kobe Allman signaling he will not dismantle the foundation of the team unless the trades make the team better, what do you think the floor and the ceiling is for the upcoming season? Is it worth being stuck right outside the lottery? I think so, but I do not want to end up being stuck in a situation similar to Charlotte or Atlanta from a few years back, failing to get over the hump or to acquire valuable assets." So I do not think it is worth being stuck right outside the lottery. They have a top 10 protected pick, and as I said, you want to be in the lottery getting chances at the top level draft picks. Next year is a weird draft, to my knowledge. If you're looking at some of the players, you have like RJ Barrett, you have Cam Reddish, you have Zion Williamson, who just screams to me something crazy the Cavs would take. You have Nazir Little, who plays in North Carolina. Like, you have a lot of really interesting prospects on this team. Romeo Langford as well from Indiana, the shooting guard. If I were the Cavs, I would say it is not worth being on a lottery just to get playoff reps. I guess you get revenue. Yes, you get young guys' experience in the playoffs, but I don't think it's worth being stuck right outside of the lottery just to say you made the playoffs. I think that the way you build the foundation of this team is getting really talented young guys and developing them. The Cavs did say they were in the player development business this summer. I want to see if that's true. I think that's the best way to build. This is not going to be a free agency destination. Maybe Kobe hasn't yet proven he's going to make savvy trades, and that's just because he doesn't really have a ton to work with in terms of what he really could flip right now. But I agree, you don't want to be Charlotte. That being said, if the Cavs can make the playoffs every year in the East and sell tickets and be kind of just competent, I don't know if they're against that. I could very much see, considering how bleak things got when LeBron left the first time, that trying to bottom out seems unappealing and they have a new arena. There's all these businessy things that factor into this. It's no mistake that Kevin Love, for instance, signed his new contract at the renovated arena. They're sending a message with that. There's imagery there that they're trying to convey to the fan base. I think the floor is that if you just look at the over-unders, I think something in the 20-win range isn't out of the question. I think that the best they could be is like the 7th seed in the East. Neither would really shock me, but we're going to find out, I think, really soon just what the vibe is. And I have some guesses about what this team will be, but I probably will be wrong in some way too. And I think like defensively I expect them to be bad, but maybe I'll be wrong. Colin Hoffman asked, do you think the Cavs are a playoff team this year without LeBron? No. I'm going to give you my quick 8 playoff teams right now, and I'm going to pull up the Eastern Conference, kind of tell you who I think is going to make the playoffs. I think the 3 teams at the top of the heap are clearly going to be Philly. And this isn't, I'll say this in order. So Boston, Toronto, then Philly. And then I'm going to go Milwaukee at 4. I love Giannis. I love Budenholzer. Go Indy at 5. The Wizards at 6. And then I think Cleveland, the Cavs could be in this group along with Charlotte, Detroit, Brooklyn, theoretically, and Miami. I'm going to go Miami and Detroit getting those last 2 playoff spots. So I think the Cavs are going to be down at the bottom of the East with Atlanta, with Charlotte, with the Brooklyn Nets, and with the Orlando Magic. I think the Bulls and the Magic and the Hawks will be worse than the Cavs. So that's kind of a tricky spot. That means you're probably ending up with like the 7th pick-ish again. And that's not great, but that to me would be what I would say is I think they're somewhere right outside the playoff hunt, but and better than like 4 teams. They're probably better than the Knicks too because of that Porzingis injury. So it'll be close. They'll have opportunities to win games against bad teams. But if I were to tell you right now who I think makes the playoffs, they're not on my list. Justin Rodak asked, just listen to your pod about possible starting lineups. This is from a while back, so apologies to Justin. We can see depending on how intent Lou is to develop talent. Why did both hosts think a reasonable starting guard lineup would exclude JR for Sexton when we saw how that went last year? JR was upset and didn't play well when replaced with a Hall of Fame player in Dwayne Wade, and now it's a good idea to replace him with a rookie? I would love to hear deeper reasoning to support your thought outside of just getting Sexton playing time because he get playing time off the bench. That is the reasoning. Look, like playing time, not all playing time is created equal. You want Colin Sexton playing minutes with Kevin Love, I think. You want him playing minutes with Jetty to develop that chemistry. You want him playing, I think, with George Hill and with Tristan Thompson, who can throw lobs to, and Larry Nance, who can throw lobs to. Some of those guys will come off the bench. You, of course, can stagger minutes. You can play him at the end of games. You can make adjustments to optimize time while still you know, not starting JR. It's a worth note now that even as we record this on October, I record this on October 4th for October 5th, they're not starting JR, and that's not even to play to give Sexton an opportunity. It's to get Rodney Hood and Jetty Osman opportunities. I think when you just look, I understand not wanting to make players disgruntled. I think JR's done a lot for this franchise, done a lot for the team, has been a pretty good guy since he's been here. The finals gaffe last year aside, Ty's going to think to try to do right by veterans. That's just sort of his MO. I think he's going to want to play the veterans. We'll get an idea of that sort of on Saturday too, because JR didn't play in the preseason opener. But the future of this team is the youth. JR, this is likely JR Smith's last year in Cleveland. That is an uncomfortable thing for us to really say, because he is going to be beloved. He will be someone that I think could come back and shut down the city to some degree when he retires and, you know, comes back and visits for like a title reunion or something like that. The guy's beloved. But you look at his contract. He's making $14.7 million this year. Next season, JR Smith has a non-guaranteed in his deal. If I'm correct, he has a very small guarantee on that contract for next season. So they're not going to be paying JR Smith, who will be 34 next year. Almost $16 million in 2019-20. This is J.R. Smith's last year in Cleveland. Unless he comes back on a really cheap deal, he is not part of the future. Like, you get him playing time, you help him get spacing for guys, stuff like that, but Sexton should be higher on the priority list. Like, the three guys that should be the focus this year, Kevin Love, Sexton, Osman, I think Nance, and then Rodney Hood would sort of be in my next grouping there. The last question comes from JimRun85. So he asked, what's the status of Coach Lou's health heading into the season? I think he'd be a great coach for this young nucleus. We're going to find out. I talked about this with David Zavok yesterday, so you can go and check that out. I think a lot about Ty in terms of what we're going to be getting here. But as far as I know, he's healthy. We'll see how he holds up this year. We'll see sort of what he's feeling like, what he says about his health throughout the year. I think it's something worth revisiting. But for all indications, from what I've been told, from what he said, he's much healthier. The changes he made last year should have him ready to go. And look, this will be, to some degree, a less grinding season. Even if there are very high-stress moments, because there will be, it shouldn't be as crazy as coaching LeBron James. Just the reality of the situation. So that's all the questions for this week. Again, if you want to submit questions for future mailbags, go to LockedOnCavs on Twitter or LockedOnCavs@gmail.com. The next one of these will not be till later in the month. We're going to hit a slew of preview content and a slew of game coverage in the next couple weeks. So somewhere in between October 23rd and October 30th, we'll probably do another mailbag. So get your questions in before then if you want to hear them answered on this show. And we might do that one on Facebook Live as well, because I love doing that live interaction, and it's just kind of fun to get questions in real time. So here are three things to watch for in Saturday's Cavs-Celtics game. On the Boston side, no Gordon Hayward, according to reporting from Chris Forsberg. I am not sure about Kyrie yet, but it'd be interesting to see if he does play and what he has to say just to kind of about the Cavs, because he don't think he's really talked about his former franchise this summer. And also, J.R. Smith should play. I think everyone is sort of good to go on the Cavs side. So, number one, my big thing is, who does Colin Sexton play with? In the first preseason game on Tuesday against Boston as well, Sexton was sort of siloed into bench guys. He played with Korver, which I liked. He played with Nance, which I liked. Don't love him playing with Jordan Clarkson. So, but does he get minutes in this game with Kevin Love, with Osman? Does he mix more with the starters this time than he did before? I think it'd be a really big positive if he did. I want to see him really get integrated with those guys. And I think that's sort of something that has to happen. It's harder, again, to do it off the bench, but I want to see it happen, and I want to see it happen in the preseason. You don't want to take too much stock in preseason. There's a lot more kind of at play. You have more bodies you're running through trying to see who's going to be at the end of the roster, but I want to see who he plays with. That is the most interesting thing to me about this game. Number two, I would say let's look at Sam Dekker. I'm going to say, does he play better than he did against Boston? I thought he was the worst Cavs rotation-y player in that first game. And I want to see if anyone else would get his minutes. Could Ante Zizic get bumped ahead of him, or at least get a chance to? Could they go small and play David Nwaba? I want to see if how committed Ty is, sort of, at least get a better idea of if Decker is sort of his backup four. I think he's going to have a lot of chances to win that job, but I'm going to see if they would move off of that to any degree and see if he at least throws different looks out there in this game. I really broadly want to sort of know what kind of lineups Ty's thinking about using with this team. And then lastly, because the Cavs do have one open roster spot, let's see if Kobe Simmons, Isaiah Taylor, someone else stands out. Let's see if Billy Preston, who's on a two-way deal, stands out. I those guys will play a lot of the second half, I would guess. We'll kind of get a better idea of that once Ty talks at Shootaround on Saturday. But I want to see if those guys kind of stand out in any way, and if anyone kind of makes a case to be kept on the roster. Taylor had, I think, had the best game of them the other night, but we'll see if he could keep that up. So that'll be it for today's show. We'll be back on Sunday/Saturday again after Habib Connor, most likely, if you with a recap of Cavs Celtics. If you have questions you want answered on the next mailbag, again, submit them to @LockedOnCavs on Twitter or to @LockedOnCavs@gmail.com. A 5-star review on Apple Podcasts guarantees that your question gets answered. And be sure to check out all the stuff we have going on. If you're the Sword, my big season preview's up. We have a bunch of still more player preview profiles and player weakness breakdowns coming. Please go read those. You'll learn a lot about this team by reading those and all the great stuff. We'll have some new additions coming soon, and I think you guys are really going to love everything we're doing over there this season. And if you want more Cavs preview content from me, the Locked On NBA podcast will have the big season preview blog from all 30 teams, all 30 hosts, in the next week or so. So go check that out, subscribe to that feed, and make sure you don't miss that. But this has been Locked On Cavaliers for October 5th. I'm Chris Manning. Talk to you soon.